Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. I hope everyone is doing great tonight. We're so happy that you're here. We have a most special guest with us tonight who I'm going to introduce and bring on in just a couple of moments. I wanted to tell everyone that the theme song you were listening to, Judy Joy Jones Show theme, was composed by a young Belgium classical composer by the name of Stefan Maelaars. And Stefan was on our show about a month ago. We interviewed him, and he graciously composed a beginning and ending Judy Joy Jones Show theme. And I would keep my eye on Stefan. He is quite a brilliant composer, and I think he did a beautiful job. Thank you, Stefan. And I wanted to tell everyone that I would like to congratulate Alan Levy, who is the founder, CEO of Blog Talk Radio. And Alan recently was he made the Silicon Alley Insider 100. Alan is really a mover and shaker and is moving us critically into our galactic communications through shows like this, through Blog Talk Radio. So without Alan's genius, we wouldn't be talking right now. So thanks, Alan. We really appreciate all the work you do. And before I tell you about our special guest tonight, who is Maestro Peter Bay, who is the conductor of the Austin Symphony Orchestra, I wanted to let you know a couple of upcoming shows. Next Tuesday, which is November 11th at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, be sure and check your time zone, we have a psychiatrist. His name is Dr. William Glasser. And Dr. Glasser is known throughout the world as the author of Reality Therapy. He has written over 20 books. And he and his wife are both going to be on our show. Her name is Charlene, and we are so looking forward to it. And then on Friday night, we have another psychiatrist, and her name is Dr. Judith Orloff. And Dr. Orloff is all over the place. She's got a best-selling book, and she is not only a psychiatrist, MD, board certified, but she also considers herself to be an intuition expert, and I cannot wait to have her on. And then just to give you a little bit of a, let's say, a preview, I can't tell you who it is yet, but on December 5th, all I'm going to say is it has to do with Yoko Ono and John Lennon. John Lennon and Yoko Ono, and I cannot tell you anything else. So You're going to have to stay tuned and check out the website to find out about that. And right now I want to get on with tonight's show. Let me give you a little bit of a brief introduction to my show, Peter Bay. He has a very extensive bio, which you can find at www.austinsymphony.org. And that is on the description page of tonight's show, www.austinsymphony.org. It is so extensive, I obviously can't tell you everything, but you can certainly go and look at it. I will give you a brief summary of the bio. Maestro Peter Bay has been the conductor of the Austin Symphony since 1988. He is a native of Washington, D.C. Mr. Bay is a graduate of the University of Maryland and the Peabody Institute. In 1994, he was selected to participate in the Leonard Bernstein American Conductors Program, and he was the first prize winner of the 1980 Baltimore Symphony Orchestra Young Conductors Competition, and he was also a prize winner of the 1987 Leopold Tchaikovsky, I'm sorry, I'm not real good with enunciation, but we're going to get him to repeat that, competition. One of the things that really intrigued me about the Austin Symphony is how much they do for the youth in the area. And as you know, I have dedicated part of this show to absolutely presenting the best in the sciences, music, and arts to children around the world that might be listening to the show. And the Austin Symphony Orchestra has presented to over 90,000 pre-K through high school age students in Austin and the surrounding areas this past season, an extensive youth education program. And, you know, something like that is just, you can't really put a value on it because it changes lives in ways we'll never, never know. And I'm just so pleased to have him on our show tonight. And not only does it enhance the lives of the youth in the Austin area, Austin, Texas, but also for all of the adults. Everyone in the area is enhanced by the Austin Symphony. And if any of you have some questions, I want you to call in tonight. The number is 646-929-1344. 646-929-1344. And I'm going to bring up Maestro Peter Bay and let him tell you much more than I ever could in a much better way. Hello?
Good evening.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm very well, Judy. It's nice to be on your show.
Thank you so very much. It's just an honor and a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
I know that there are many things I've left out, and there are many things that are much more important than the things I brought up, and I'm going to let you spend a little bit of time sharing with our listeners around the world some things that you feel are the most important.
Well, I think, first of all, music has been with us for, you know, as long as humans have been around, and I believe firmly that music is something that not only enhances one's life, but is certainly a very important part and a necessary part of everyone's life. And the fact that I can make a life conducting classical music for people of all ages is really a privilege. And it seems to me all of the people that I know, whether they're in first grade or they're in their 90s, have benefited in one way or another from loving and listening to music.
Absolutely. I was a part of being taken to symphonies when I was very young, and it really changed my life. And at the time, I wasn't quite sure what I was listening to, but now that I look back, I know that it opened my mind and my ears to things I'd never dreamed.
I had exactly the same experience when I was a child.
Oh.
I was taken to see the National Symphony, which is the the major orchestra in Washington, D.C., which is my hometown.
Uh-huh.
And my parents had always played records of classical music at home, and that was an exciting experience. But to hear the sound of a live orchestra playing and to watch them all create the sound and to work hard to produce those sounds is something that is indescribable if you've never heard it live.
Absolutely. It changes everything about your ear, your hearing. And even if you can't, you're so young and nobody has ever mentioned what a symphony is, or it does. It changes everything. I would love to know, now, did you come from a family of musicians or composers?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, my father was, from the Philippines, and he was trained as a lawyer, and he had a tin ear. He could not even sing Happy Birthday. It sounded like some piece of foreign avant-garde music. My mother comes from Switzerland, and she was trained as a nanny, but she, as a child, was taken to see the opera and to see classical music in Switzerland. So it was in her blood, but really no one in my family, whether immediate or distant, none of them were musicians. So I'm the first one.
You're the first one. Wow. So, but they must have gotten around you and helped you get it out. They realized they had a gifted child in music.
They certainly helped me realize some of my goals. And, of course, they couldn't relate to what I was interested in doing. And indeed, my father was very much against the idea of my becoming a professional musician because he thought I would starve.
Okay. Well, that's kind of like it. That's all you ever hear. But obviously, you're not starving.
Fortunately, I'm not.
No, he was wrong. And so you had to prove him wrong. I mean, you know, it's funny how that happens. Now, do you compose yourself?
I don't. I don't have that talent.
You don't? Okay.
I think it's a special talent to be able to compose music. I think of myself more as a channeler, someone who tries to interpret the music that's already been written by someone else and try to interpret it.
And try to interpret it. Well, you know, I was reading some of the fun facts about you that are on your website, and I was just tickled. You know, some of the things, it's like, okay, well, your musical interests are not only classical, but rock, jazz, film. And I thought, wow, you know, you would think it was strictly classical, but not so.
No, I grew up, I'm 51 years old, so I grew up really with the Beatles and the Monkees, and with a lot of rock and roll. And it wasn't until I was in high school that I really explore classical music seriously. So I feel like I've had a sort of well-rounded introduction to all kinds of music. And basically, I'll listen to anything except country and western or rap.
Oh, that's interesting. There you are in Austin and Willie Nelson.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I mean, I will, if I'm taken to a club, if I go to a club,
right,
and hear country music, I'll certainly enjoy what I hear, but it's not music I choose to listen to.
I understand. Who is your favorite composer, just off the wall?
You know, I'm asked that a lot, Judy, and it's very hard for me to answer that question, because if I say Beethoven, then I'm thinking, well, maybe I should have said Mozart, or maybe I should have said Bach, or Copeland, there are just so many fine composers. It's, for me, it's like choosing a favorite food. I just can't do it.
It's really hard, yeah.
It's very hard.
Yeah, because you hear all of them and all the parts of them you understand. But I did read that you have a music collection, a record collection of over 7,000 recordings. Is that right?
Well, unfortunately, it's true. I started when I was a kid and with records, and of course now it's CDs and records. And
sure.
I must have close to 10,000 CDs now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that makes sense. I don't know when you have time to listen to them, but maybe you can bring them out now. You know, I was just like, oh, my gosh, that's so many. And your favorite dessert, I hate to bring this up, but I know what it is.
Yes,
you're going to, yeah.
You
cream
do.
Puff.
Well, I, what did I put down? Is that cream puff?
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you how that happened, Judy. I, I had a godmother who used to make cream puffs from scratch for me when I was a kid, and I just adored the flavor. I guess it's a nostalgic thing.
Okay, so it kind of, well, you know, I wanted to let you know, of course, you probably already do, but this show reaches, like, everyone on the earth. So it could be that a child in some country that has never, or even the United States, heard of a symphony will download this show. And they, you know, maybe they're not listening live to call in and ask you. But if it tweaks their interest and they would like to know more, what would you suggest to a child that, you know, maybe they're 7 or 8 years old and somehow they're gifted, but they're in conditions perhaps that aren't going to allow for them to get all of it out at a certain age. But no matter what would you suggest to a child that has a calling as a classical musician?
Well, the first thing I'd say is to talk in earnest with the music teacher at the school. And I'm hoping that everyone listening has access to a school and is going to school. And I would hope that school has some sort of music program.
Right.
And I think teachers have such important influence on young people. I know most of the music teachers, if not all the music teachers, when approached by someone who's really interested in music as a child, their eyes light up because they themselves know what it was like to be introduced to music or to discover music. So to pass that interest on to a young person would be an easy thing for a music teacher. So I'd have that, have the parent or have the student go directly to the music teacher and say, I really love classical music. What can I do? Is there an instrument I can play? Or if I can't afford an instrument, can I sing in the choir?
Mm-hmm.
There are many outlets for young people in music, not requiring a lot of money.
That's the main thing. And, of course, mainstream, we hear one kind of music, but I want to kind of introduce everyone to classical music that may not have been ever exposed to it. And I'm sure a lot of the people listening have been. There's no doubt in my mind. But there will be those that haven't been. If you could define for us, what is classical music?
That's a great question, Judy. I'm not sure I can answer it adequately, but I can say this. It is probably the easiest way to describe it, and the simplest way, is that this is notated music that is meant to be played as notated. Now, what I mean by that is that let's say you pick up a piece of classical music written by Mozart, and whether it's written for the piano or it's written for the violin, you basically play the notes that he wrote without improvising on them. And I say that because popular music, even though it is written down, most of the songwriters, whether they be Richard Rodgers or Sting or the Beatles, they wrote the tunes down, but they didn't expect the performers to play them exactly as they're written, you know, to do them as you kind of wish to do. And jazz, of course, would be a further extension of not playing exactly what's written. But classical music is really a notated art, and it's meant to be performed as it's written. And I think a real testimony to the power and the worth of classical music is that we are still performing music that was written close to 500 years ago.
That's right.
As written. And there's a lot of music, pop music, that comes and goes even within 1 year. But I would describe classical music.
You know, that's great, because I really believe that it's timeless, and there you can't put your finger on when it was actually born or when it's going to end. It has no time, and to me, that's kind of like saying it's great music. And for everyone to be exposed to it, even if at first you're kind of going, what is this? But, you know, it has a way. You know, I had a scientist on my show last night, and we were discussing that a lot of people came out and said that Mozart, listening to Mozart when you were a baby, that that will make you smarter. Now, he doesn't think that's true. I'm not sure. You know, how do you feel about that? If you have an infant?
I do have an infant. As a matter of fact, I have a
seven-month-old
son. And
oh.
I play all kinds of things for him. I play classical music for him, and I play popular music and things that I don't think will bombard his mind. I don't really know that one can scientifically prove that listening to Mozart will make your child smarter. But I do know this, and it's just strictly from my experience working with young students in school.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, the kids who are involved in the music program usually end up with the best test scores. Not exclusively, of course. I mean, there are
right.
really bright kids who are not involved with music. But in general, if you have, let's say, 100 music students in a school, they typically test better than the average student who is not involved in music. And I think there have been a number of scientific studies that have supported that view, and there are some elements of classical music that might, let's say, set up an infant's mind for success in school. For example, classical music, for the most part, is very organized music.
Right.
If you listen to a piece by Mozart, usually the phrases are in 4 or 8 bar segments.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, I guess subconsciously, if you hear this over and over again, you can tell when a phrase of music starts and finishes. Somehow
mm-hmm.
the mind organizes the beats that way in 4s and 8s and 16s. And usually there are 2 beats to a bar or 3 beats to a bar, 4 beats
mm-hmm.
to a bar. And there's all sort of mathematical setups, I'd say, involved in classical music that I think kids pick up subconsciously.
Subconsciously. And
well,
as
even,
long
Judy,
as...
Just mm-hmm. think about it. If we were just to sing a simple nursery rhyme like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star,
mm-hmm.
there are several mathematical elements going on there. Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, that's
mm-hmm.
a phrase of music that lasts 4 bars long, and each
mm-hmm.
beat is... each bar of music is 2 beats to a bar. Twinkle would be 2 beats. Twinkle, another 2 beats. Little,
mm-hmm.
another 2 beats. And star is a full 2 beats. You're already organizing the sounds mathematically, whether you know it or not.
Amazing. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So, you know, the way that the structure, it could be very, very, like you said, it's an organized way of... it seems like it would be a very organized way for brains to kind of relax and get into another dimension and open up new avenues of thinking that they haven't thought of before. And unless you play an instrument, it would be kind of hard, I guess, to explain it. But couldn't you sing in a choir and have that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And another aspect of music which I think is very important for young people, let's say, for example, your son or daughter is in a choir at school, and
mm-hmm.
this is a choir of fourth graders. Well, they're not only learning to sing and to use their own human voice to create sounds, they're
mm-hmm.
doing it in an organized fashion. In other words, there's a choir director.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning how to sing together, meaning they're listening to one another. They're learning how to sing in an ensemble, all trying to sing accurately in the same beat and the same pitch.
Right.
And they're also learning how to take direction from an authority figure.
Amazing.
So
yeah.
It is just singing in a choir is teaching really some really important personal and social skills that will best serve them as they get older.
That's right, and I think that most of the time people aren't aware of what that is, but you just put it into a really beautiful way for us to understand. Could I ask you, where do you are you planning, let's say, a move in the near future, or do you plan to stay there with the Austin Symphony, or where do you see yourself in 5 years?
That's a good question. I really love Austin, Texas. It's I've lived in different parts of the country and worked in I'm from Washington, D.C., and most of my life I've lived up and down the East Coast. I did spend some time in St. Paul, Minnesota, and now in Austin. I just love the atmosphere of the city. It's a very environmentally conscious city. It's got wonderful activities. People here really care about the arts, whether it's classical art or pop music, country music, whatever you want to listen to, it's here. And I just, I've really fallen in love with the city, and I hope to stay, I hope to be here the next 5 years.
Amazing. That's wonderful.
It would take an extraordinary job offer in a much bigger city to lure me there, but I'm extremely happy here and have been for the last, 10 years now.
Wow. Well, it's a very progressive city, and I've heard nothing but good things about Austin, Texas. It's not like other cities, I think, in Texas. It's much more progressive, you know. Now, I'm in San Francisco, and I've even heard it somewhat compared on a much smaller level or whatever to San Fran, and so I can understand you wouldn't want to leave. But I suppose if you had an opportunity or felt called, of course, you know, you would, but right now you're quite, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, but there's just too many. I downloaded what people are saying about Peter Bay, and it's just like pages and pages, and I thought, oh my gosh, how do I condense this? And, you know,
you can't believe everything you read there.
Oh, really? Oh, no, I think you make it up, right? You just put it on the website.
Well, I won't go that far.
Okay. Well, I hope not. I believe everything like that. But, again, you can read this through www.austinsymphony.org. You know, for the beginners out there that would like to say, well, I don't know classical music, but I would like to know a couple of composers, three or four, that you would recommend for a beginner, total beginner, to maybe purchase a CD or something. Would you have those to offer people?
Oh, sure. I mean, first of all, I doubt seriously that there's someone living in the United States who has not heard classical music. Maybe they didn't realize that they'd heard it, but there is so much classical music that's used either as the tunes for commercials or for movies, television shows. I mean, I happen to be a fan of Judge Judy, for example.
Okay.
And Judge Judy, even though it's kind of a disco version of it, she uses as a theme for her show Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And people who grew up watching the Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny cartoons, there are quite a few of them that use classical music as, for the basis of that particular cartoon, whether they're opera excerpts or piano concertos or what have you. But I would say this. There are so many collections out there on CD or online of, let's say, the world's greatest classical music. You know, you can get all the samples of the most popular things on two CDs. There'd be 100 tunes on there. There are plenty of compact discs out there. And anyone working at a bookstore or CD store can help with that sort of thing. But if you want to really dig in and hear something typically classical but solid music, I would start with something like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Okay.
Because it has the drama, it has the powerful sound of the orchestra, it has the tune, the ba-ba-ba-ba tune that everybody knows.
Right.
And to hear how Beethoven develops that tune in the course of the symphony, I think, is a great place to start.
Absolutely. That sounds great. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And we can find that everywhere. You know, because everywhere. Everybody has heard. Like you said, I think so many people, we've heard the things, but we're not aware what they are. We hear them with a commercial, you know, but who would take time to find out, you know, that it's Beethoven's Fifth Symphony or whatever.
Right.
But,
that's right.
You
and,
know,
and, you know, there's some famous movies that have used classical music as the background. Of course, you know, the first one I think of is Amadeus, which won an Academy Award some years ago, and it is the life of Mozart, even though it, some of it is fictional, or fictitious, I should say. The music is not fictitious. It's the real thing. So,
yeah, I saw that. That was an excellent.
Maybe a movie is the place to start. And you know,
now, when you
the,
say fictitious, you think parts of that might not have been actually accurate about maybe he was poisoned or some of the.
Right, that's right. Some of the storyline was fictionalized in order to make his life seem more interesting, which I find rather hilarious, because even if one were to film a straight version of his life using facts only, I think people would find it very unusual and interesting on its own.
Even without all the, well,
yeah,
that's Hollywood,
not,
yeah.
That's right. He did not poison Salieri.
You don't think?
It's completely false.
Do you believe that? Okay.
No, I don't believe it at all. No, and it's pretty much been proven that was totally false.
Totally false. He just died of, like, kidney failure or some disease.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you think about it, in those days, the medical field was very limited. People died of lead poisoning all the time. And,
absolutely.
You know, foods weren't preserved very well, so he died a natural death.
Just a natural Well, you know, Hollywood has to have a little bit more to add to the drama and all. And, you know, actually, we don't know. I mean, Robert Schumann. I was kind of reading about him, and I thought, you know, that's pretty dramatic, his life. And
absolutely. Yeah, and he had a fascinating life, first of all, being married to a woman who was, in her own right, a fantastic composer and a pianist, but was unable to really pursue those fields in earnest because she was a woman. Well, this is in the 1800s when a woman composer was really unheard of and certainly not a supported profession for a woman. Women just were not composers, and they were not taken seriously as composers. And at the end of Schumann's life, he developed a very severe mental illness and tried to compose through that period, but eventually died in an asylum, I believe, in his late 40s. So, yeah, he definitely had a very, very interesting life.
Tumultuous. Well, now, his music, has it really come into its own, Robert Schumann, or is it still kind of not real well known as far as what it might be in a few years?
Well, in the concert hall, I'd say Schumann is, he would be in the second 10 of the greatest composers. I mean, I think the most listened to composers in classical music are really Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Mozart. And it would take me a few minutes. Tchaikovsky is probably another one. And Schumann would probably be in the next group of 10. But his music is played quite frequently by orchestra.
What about Gustav Mahler?
Mahler is another interesting guy. His life story actually has been filmed or made into films because he had a very tumultuous life as well. A man obsessed with death and dying. And he would probably also be in that second group of 10. But his music is astounding, and but it requires a lot of listening. Most of his symphonies are at least an hour long, ranging from about 50 minutes up to 90 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's very concentrated listening when one listens to his music. But he not only had his heart on his sleeve when he wrote, but you feel every pain that he felt clearly in the music. So you feel like you're listening to a man's real soul and heart when you listen to his music.
Wow, Gustav Mahler. I haven't heard a lot of his, but I've seen a little bit now and then. You know, it's like I'm interested to know more about him and find out.
He was absolutely fascinating man. Struggling, well, not only struggling with his own morbid thoughts, but he lost two children in their infancy, who died of diseases, and he was a conductor. In fact, he was the conductor of the New York Philharmonic back in the early 1900s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Conductor, composer. He struggled with his religious beliefs. He was born Jewish, I believe, and then converted to Catholicism, and then felt very guilty about leaving his heritage, and all these sort of struggles came out in the music, which I find fascinating.
Wow. Yeah, that's the thing. Opera has always kind of intrigued me. I don't know too much about opera, but I do know I've heard that Wagner, some of his operas are very long, and you know, is that true?
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, the longest of them last about 6 hours.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but you know, I say that, and most people, they're aghast at the length of those. But you know, the four biggest operas that he wrote, or most famous operas, are part of something called the Ring Cycle.
Okay.
And they're no longer really than the Lord of the Rings movies, which are based on basically the same storyline. But if you watched four Lord of the Rings movies at 3 hours, you'd basically be seeing and experiencing the length of a Ring Cycle.
Wow, that's a long time. But he has so many people that love his operas.
They're fanatical about them. And I know, I don't know them personally, but I know that there are people who will fly all over the world in order to watch a performance of the Ring Cycle on four consecutive nights. That's how fanatical they are about his music.
Amazing. You know, you just don't know. It seems like some forms of music, like classical music, it appears to me sometimes the composers are known better, you know, later on after their death. I know I live in San Francisco, and one of the local composers who's, I think, quite well known is John Adams.
Oh, yes, I know him.
Oh, okay.
And he's a phenomenal composer, very interesting man.
Is he is he like ahead of his time? A lot of people won't know him until many years from now type thing, or?
Well, no, happily, he is very well known and respected while alive, and he's one of the lucky ones. He's one of the lucky ones. He was championed originally by the San Francisco Symphony, and I believe he taught at the conservatory there, and was one of the founders of a type of music called minimalism.
Oh, okay.
But he is one of the most sought after composers and now conductors of orchestras in the world. His opera, his newest opera is called Dr. Atomic, and it's about Oppenheimer, the inventor of the bomb, in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And it's playing at the Metropolitan Opera right now.
Wow.
He's a very, very successful composer of operas and of orchestra music and even some chamber music, too.
Wow, that's great. You know, sometimes when they're local and you know you can hear them mostly, you know, anytime you want, people don't tend to, but you're from another area and you're looking from kind of outside, and I've heard his name over and over and over, and I wasn't quite sure. I knew he had to be well known, you know, especially in this area, but again, you know, this is where you're from, people don't tend to jump as quickly because they think, well, they can see a John Adams performance, you know.
Right. No, that was the case for many composers, and I guess the same thing for artists. You're least appreciated in your own, you know, in your own hometown. But John's music has now become internationally known and recognized, and he's one of the lucky ones.
Have you had any symphonies with some of his music that you performed, or?
I have done a few of his works. The one that's the most famous happens to be a very short piece. It's called "A Short Ride in a Fast Machine,"
huh.
And it lasts about 4 minutes long. And if people want an introduction to his sound, I would suggest that they look for that recording or a soundbite of that piece, "A Short Ride in a Fast Machine."
In a Fast Machine? That's an interesting title.
Well, he comes up with very interesting titles for his pieces. Even the names of his operas are basically events in real life, in history. His first opera is called Nixon in China.
Nixon in China. Uh-huh.
Yes, about that very historic trip in the 70s.
And, of course.
And then there's The Death of Klinghoffer,
mm-hmm.
which you may recall is the story of a tragic story of a Jewish a man who was, I believe he was confined to a wheelchair on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And he was murdered by, I think, what turned out to be a Palestinian person or group.
Right.
I can't remember the details, but John tends to write about real events and makes them into operas. And Dr. Atomic is a case in point.
Wow! So he's very here and now, and
very,
you know,
much so.
Very. When what is a symphony doing in next, the Austin Symphony Orchestra? What are y'all? I guess actually Christmas is almost here. So you're
well,
gonna
yes,
doing...
but even before then, we have a concert happening not in 2 weekends,
mm-hmm.
and we're playing 2 works of Brahms, his
okay.
fourth symphony,
mm-hmm.
and 3 of his Hungarian dances also, and we're playing a very interesting violin concerto written by a Hungarian composer named Rozsa, R-O-Z-S-A. And Rozsa came to the United States during the Second World War and landed in Hollywood and became best known for having written some epic film scores, such as Ben-Hur. El Cid is another one, The Robe. And so he became primarily known as a film composer, but we're going to actually play a violin concerto of his that was originally written for Heifetz.
Wonderful. And when is this?
This is November the 21st and November the 22nd. We're playing here in our brand new concert hall.
Oh, you have a new concert hall. Wonderful.
Yes, it opened in very late March of this year. It's called the mm-hmm. Long Center for the Performing Arts, and we're so lucky to have it. It has fantastic acoustics.
Mm.
And people have all raved about the sound in there, and the orchestra and I are so happy to be able to play in there.
Oh, I bet. Oh, my gosh. Well, how did y'all get that funded? How were you able to come up with that? Were you able to...
Well, that's a long story.
And
it was a long time in coming,
sorry.
Though. I think, no, the discussion for building a hall here in Austin, which we desperately needed, started
mm-hmm.
about 10 years ago. And when the plans finally got off the ground, 9/11 happened.
Oh,
And you know, when 9/11 happened, a lot of fundraising came to a screeching halt.
Absolutely.
As did everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it took another 7 years before we were finally able to raise about $77 million to complete the construction of the building.
But you have. And where is it located in Austin?
In Austin, it's located just south of what's called now Lady Bird Lake. It's not really a lake. It's a river
mm-hmm.
that runs through the downtown area,
mm-hmm.
but it's been dammed up in several places to create these lakes. It used to be called Town Lake, but it's right in the heart of the downtown area in Austin, just south of Town Lake, or now called Lady Bird Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very beautiful facility. It holds about 2,400 people.
Okay.
And not a bad seat in the house. You can see from any place in the hall.
Wow, and the acoustics are probably a million times better than the last place you were located, I'm sure.
Well, maybe not a million, but they're considerably better than where we were before.
Considerably. Oh, wow. You know, Austin, it really has a great reputation, and it's growing. Everybody, you know, talks highly of it. And so if anyone is going to Austin and would like to be part of our, you know, experience, the Austin Symphony. Let me give you that website one more time. It's www.austinsymphony.org. And we have been speaking tonight to Maestro Peter Bay, and he has been with the Austin Symphony Orchestra since 1998. Is that right?
That's right.
And, you know, I was just amazed that some of the things you've done. You know, whenever a person has done as many things as you, it's really hard to kind of get it all in. But I want everyone to know that they can find out more about you on your website. And do you go, like, all right, I'm in San Francisco, so, like, would you ever come here and be a guest conductor?
Oh, I would be delighted to. If the San Francisco Symphony were interested in having me come to guest conduct, I would certainly do that. The SFSO is one of the best orchestras in this country, and I say not because I'm speaking to you in San Francisco, but
right.
Its reputation is extraordinarily high, and that a lot of that has to do, of course, with the players, the fine players in that orchestra, but especially to Michael Tilson Thomas, who
he's amazing,
has really built the reputation of that orchestra higher than it already was.
Yeah, Michael Tilson, you know, I don't know if he sleeps. He's just always, you know, we all hear about him. You can go anywhere in the city and you see something that says Michael Tilson Thomas.
He's a world-renowned artist.
And, of course, you're outside of the city. Again, I'm here, so I hear the name, I see it. And you kind of take it for granted, and I think, well, I can go there any time. But when you're outside, you can hear the rumble. I did hear once that he was kind of like the rock star of symphony. I mean, he really has a reputation of being quite good.
You know, that's not far from the truth. I think he's in his 60s now, but he certainly doesn't look it. He doesn't act it, and he is very much... he's involved in all kinds of music, not just classical music, but he's a great pianist. I think he's related to the Gershwins.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and has performed with rock bands, with jazz bands.
Mm-hmm.
He's an extraordinarily well-rounded musician and a real champion of new composers, young composers, as well as old composers.
Wow, well, we would love to have you come here and guest conduct the San Francisco Symphony. All right. I'll put the word out.
You can help me with that.
I will. I've got a big mouth, and I would love to have you come here.
Your pleasure.
Oh, well, it's just been so delightful having you on tonight. And, you know, it's just a really gracious thing for you to come on and share your time and all everything that goes into doing something like this, and I really appreciate it. I would like to tell everyone one more time, if you go to the description of tonight's show, you're going to find out a lot more, and then if you go to the website, www.austinsymphony.org, and our guest tonight has been Maestro Peter Bay, and he was also featured on Blog Talk Radio today. And if you go to blogtalkradio.com and you look at the scrolling bar at the top, you're going to see a picture of him, and that's going to remain until I think they change him at midnight or whatever, but I just want to say again, thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I really enjoyed the time, and I hope we do it again soon.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night.
And I want to tell everyone to end the show. We're going to listen to the young Belgium composer, classical composer, Stefan Meylaars, M-E-Y-L-A-A-R-S. Laers. And he composed the beginning and ending Judy Joy Jones Show theme. And we're going to play the ending. Thank you, Stefan. And you can see Stefan, more about him, at luckyrecords.be. And that stands, I guess that's Belgium. So that's luckyrecords.be. And I think his music is absolutely breathtaking. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoy it. And thank you so much, Maestro Peter Bay, for taking your time to share with us classical music through the Austin Symphony. Good night, everyone. I love you and thank you.